This is the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome to Eat Great, Live Well Radio, your trusted source for the information you need to take control of your health and your life. No complicated medical speak, just straight talk about eating healthier without giving up the foods you love. Now, here's the host of Eat Great, Live Well Radio, food psychology coach and best-selling author, Janelle McCauley.
Hi, and welcome to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm Janelle McCauley, and I'm so glad you decided to join me today. My promise to you is that if you take action on the information we provide each week, you will transform your health and your life. But before I introduce you to my guest for today's show, I want to invite you to go to eatgreatlivewellradio.com and download our free ebook, Overcoming Portion Distortion. It's packed with quick and easy ideas for making family mealtime fun and healthy. So get your free copy today at eatgreatlivewellradio.com. We've got another great show planned for you today, so grab a pen and paper and your favorite beverage, and let's get started. I'm really excited about today's guest. Wendy Francis is a registered dietitian with more than 20 years of experience working with clients. We recently met Wendy at the eWomen Network Conference in Dallas and hit it off right away. Wendy's gift is facilitating permanent transformations for others by helping them first identify their fears and then break through those fears to create a better life. I know you'll find her straightforward approach both enlightening and empowering. On today's show, we're going to be talking with Wendy about one of her specialties, eating disorders, and how to identify them and how to treat them. As a woman, wife, and mother of three, an entrepreneur, runner, and avid hiker, Wendy believes in living life to the fullest while participating and practicing her passion of transformation, empowerment, and shattering old blocking beliefs. Welcome to the show, Wendy.
Thank you, Janelle. I'm excited to be here.
I'm really excited for this conversation, and I think it's one that I bet a lot of people have questions on, but they're not sure where to even start. So I'm excited to have you share a lot of great information with us today. But before we get started, I'd like to ask our guests to share just a little bit more about their background with our listeners and what it means to be a registered dietitian.
Sure, absolutely. So my background began in training as a registered and licensed dietitian. So clinically speaking, as a registered dietitian, you have to receive your undergraduate degree or subsequent type of degree, master's degree, et cetera, in clinical nutrition, and then go on to receive, to do internship and receive certification as a registered dietitian by the American Dietetic Association. So that's where I began my career, but moved straight into private practice and not into the hospital setting or the hospital realm because of my passion for eating disorders, feeding issues, and the psychological distortions around food. And that kind of drove me straight into private practice. So that's where I began my career, was way back there in Atlanta, Georgia, coming right out of school with my RD and then going straight on to my graduate degree in counseling and education.
Interesting. Is that a unique combination? I don't hear of that combination too often.
I believe that I'm less than 1% of my field. I think that was the latest statistic on eating disorder specialists throughout the country, that it's you know, although the incidence of eating disorders is on the rise, there's not many people that stay in eating disorder work for longer than 5 years because of the high rate of burnout.
Oh, I can imagine. It's probably a pretty emotional practice because you're dealing with high emotions when people have eating disorders.
It can be. For me, it's always been, it's my passion, it's my purpose, it's my calling. Transformation and allowing others to transform has been really what's propelled me in my career, and it's what I love to do. So for me, that emotional connection has only driven me to help people more further and not disenabled me to do that.
Interesting. So what's different or unique about what you do and approach that you use?
So, yeah, you know, so specifically speaking, I've talked about my, you know, my graduate degree in counseling and education, and I'm also extensively trained in eating disorders and feeding issues, trauma, grief, life and business coaching, and neurolinguistics programming. So over the last 20-plus years of my career, I've really made a concerted effort to learn and grow as much as possible so that I could help my clients look at their life and their food from all aspects and allowing them to transform physically, physiologically, mentally, psychologically, and psychosocially. So I don't just come in as a dietitian. I don't just come in as a therapist. I don't just come in as a life coach or a trauma specialist or grief specialist. I come in with all of that and my extensive experience in mothering my own children and the other things that I've lived through to allow me to look at the whole individual and to see where we can get the most transformation for that individual, whether it be in their food or in their life, in their exercise patterns, or maybe in their financial or their career path, so that we can allow them to start the process of change in any direction to begin to make that monumental movement forward.
That's really interesting because there's a lot of different ways that you work with patients and can help them. So when you first meet someone and you're trying to, you're working with them to diagnose what their issue is, how do you even get started? Because there's so many different directions that it could take.
So first and foremost, I go into every client session, whether it be virtually or in person, as a blank slate. So I am there to listen and understand before I make any presumptions. Now, I know a lot about eating disorders because I've been hearing about it for 20 years. Sometimes I can even figure out what that person's thinking before they think it, but I never go there. I always stay in that blank slate space so that I can let them lead me and I can really understand their model of the world, where they're coming from, and what would allow them to make that change monumental.
It's interesting that you're saying, because what's striking me is, you know, really listening and understanding. And you just made a statement that I think is one that is really thought-provoking. Let them lead you to understand their model of what they're thinking. So I think that's something that I think a lot of people could use in just their day-to-day life. I think a lot of times people, they think they know what you're going to say, so they're not really listening to what you're saying, and they're making assumptions. And I think when we do that, we miss a lot of what's going on.
Absolutely. And that's one of the real keys, I feel like, for me in practice, is that I never look at my clients through the lens of diagnoses. I never look at them as having anorexia or bulimia or compulsive overeating. I look at them as a whole person, and I listen to them as a whole person so that I can really see their whole model of the world. Because that, in fact, is what's going to allow me to truly understand who they are, what they want, what they need, and what's preventing them. Mm-hmm. And that's what's going to allow me to help them move forward.
Yeah, it's interesting because we were having a conversation just a couple days ago talking about reality or versus perception. But if someone believes it's real, it's, you know, their perception of what reality is. So I think it's important to understand that and not think it should be a certain way. Because just because you think it should be a certain way or I do, that doesn't mean that's what someone else believes.
Absolutely. And that's the number one block that tends to surround the majority of my clients, whether they have eating disorders or not, is that they may not feel understood or heard by the people in their world, because those other people may be making presumptions or assumptions based on their model. Yet the individual that I'm working with really perceives that whatever is going on is, you know, is their reality, and they're sitting in the fear or the trepidation around that, whether it be around food, whether it be around, you know, choosing a career in college, or whether it be around, you know, getting divorced. It's their perception of that, and I always sit back and listen to that, understand and honor it, because that is truly their belief infrastructure, and that's what's keeping them where they are. I need to understand that in order so that I can help them understand that, and that's what then can create true transformation.
That it just, that fascinates me, because I think in a lot of things, and I think probably as parents, it's really important to listen to our children, or listen to your spouse, listen to, you know, whoever you're talking to, and really listen to what they're saying. I try to, when I'm talking to managing directors, or when I'm talking to people that I am working with, I try to get them to just be really fully present and listen. And they always say that they've got to think about what they're going to say. And what I've learned, and it took me a long time to learn it, is that by listening, I actually have the right response. I don't have to worry about creating the right response. If you listen just very thoughtfully and purposefully, you're going to actually know exactly what you're supposed to say, and it's going to come together beautifully.
Yes. That's exactly right. I had a supervisor who I worked with a long time ago, and in therapy, your supervisor, person that you pay to go to help with your practice, because I developed my private practice. I went from like zero to 30-something clients in like 6 months, and so I was scrambling to get help, to help me kind of, you know, get to this level of private practice, and I found this amazing gentleman who's on the West Coast, and I remember him in our first or second session talking to me about presence with each client, and actually had me put up a symbol, and I still have it in my office today. It's a great symbol I got out in Arizona of a hand that kind of stands up in this great red rock. And it always, whenever I look at it, it always tells me slow down, stop, and listen, and trust that I know that the answer will come. And so, yeah, I so believe that just being present and listening is key, and trusting in the fact that the answers will come.
I like that. I can envision that visual of saying, wait a minute, no, stop, be present. And I love the way that you say that. Just trust that the answers will come. Did it take you a while to figure out that you really had to stop and listen, or is that something that you've always just been really good at and naturally done?
I think there are moments in time where I always have to remind myself, you know, just as humans, we can fall into default mode of moving too fast, or for me, it's too fast. I tend not to move too slow. That will take me out of presence. But I definitely was born into a family that enabled me to learn lots of life lessons about listening at a very early age. So I think some of that is my purpose, others my path, and then some is that, you know, nature, nurture thing that has allowed me to really, you know, foster my listening. And I know that's part of my gift, because that's what I feel like truly allows my clients to change, because they finally feel heard. And that is a really empowering feeling.
I love that, and I think that if people just start listening more and really being fully present, I think that will make a huge difference. We need to take a real quick break, but when we come back, I want to just shift the conversation a little bit and just talk about eating disorders and how they affect teens and others, and get into that conversation. This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
You're listening to Janelle McCauley on the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. This is Janelle McCauley. Before the break, we were having a great conversation with Wendy Francis of Empowerment Coaching International and really talking about being fully present and listening. And I loved the comment that you made, Wendy, when you said, just listen and trust that the answer will come. I think if people are more present and really listen and be part of the conversations, I think we'd have much better conversations, and I think it would help us in all areas of our life. I'd like to ask you, one of the questions I love to ask all my guests is about their big why. So why do they want to share their message about healthy living and helping others live a healthier life? So can you tell us what your big why is and how it's motivated you to live a healthier life and help people live healthier?
Absolutely. So for me, it's really about changing generational disempowerment that's really plagued my family lineage. So from mental illness to negative parent-child relationships, alcoholism, sexual abuse, and overall unhealthy living and eating habits, really my lineage is comprised of all of those things, parents, step-parents, grandparents. And so at a very early age, I made it my mission to not fall prey to that and to change the circle, not just for my family, but for myself, and to change the circle of life and then changing how I rear my family from here forth, my children, and as I'm on this earth for their children, and as my lineage stands for their children, that this, you know, this generational stuff that has come down will no longer exist. So I made it my mission to do that and have done everything and will continue to do everything to learn, grow, and change myself so that I can impart that transformation for others.
I really like that. And, you know, one thing a lot of people don't know is that when you make changes, I know when you make changes in how you eat and the way you treat your body, that can impact six generations going forward. And I think when we break those habits and break those things from our past versus blaming them and saying, I'm not successful because, it really, when we take ownership and say, I'm going to change it, I'm not, my past doesn't have to define my future, it can really change who we are, and it impacts others and really has that ripple effect on our family and everyone we're around.
Absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind, you know, what we can change just by, you know, my thing is all about efficiency. I do a lot in my life, and I love doing a lot, and I decided a long time ago that it was a waste of energy to blame, shame, or guilt, you know, anything that anybody had done to me in the past. And all that I could do is change who I am, what I stand for, what I learn, and what I can attain with that learning in this life. So I chose consciously to make that decision in order to go forward so that I could impact my lineage from this day forth.
I can see how some of the things that you've learned and shifted in your life can really help your clients and the people that you deal with going forward.
I feel, and this is going to sound outlandish, but it's really true, I feel so honored to have the experiences that I've had, because it really allows me to sit across from someone else or sit on the phone with someone and really understand who they are and what they're feeling, whether they're dealing with a parent who has alcoholism or they're dealing with their own addiction, or whether they're, you know, they've been raped or have been a, you know, have had a pedophile or a sexual abuse experience. I really have been touched by many, many experiences in my life, and I feel honored by that because it allows me to really sit with others and truly get where they're coming from.
That's really very powerful. You know, when we think of eating disorders, we often think of them as affecting teens, but can they affect other people at all ages and stages, or is there really a particular time where they tend to be more prevalent?
Not anymore. I mean, the incidence of eating disorders is on the rise now in all ages. It used to be thought of, you know, when I first started in the profession, and the majority of clients that were coming to see me were in their late teens or early 20s. But over the last 20 years, I've seen more and more young adult women in their late 20s, early 30s, and, you know, middle-aged 40s, 50s, and even 60s come to see me. There's an, you know, we know that there's an increase in statistical reporting on eating disorders just due to mass media, social media, and awareness. We also know that older women are struggling with ageism and thinism, right? How that's what I like to call it. And so, you know, we're needing to look a certain way as we age now. And so women are trying to keep up with that, and in that, developing distorted body image, distorted eating behaviors, and habits that can come from those things. So there is, you know, there is an increase in incidence of eating disorders for older women now. It's not just an adolescent disease anymore.
It's really interesting. When you are talking about that at different ages, I think of some of the things. You talk about social media, some of the things they've had where they have, you know, two doors that women can choose to go through. One's beautiful and the other one, I think, I'm going to get it wrong, but I think it's average or something. And even the most gorgeous women, they all want to go through the average door because they don't see their beauty. It's interesting. Yet if you were to ask a friend, they would absolutely say, go through the beautiful door. It's interesting that we just don't have that perception of who we are. We don't see ourselves like other people see us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, social media has an impact on that. You know, how airbrushing, touching up, highlighting, whitening, thinning, distorting, elongating, all of those things that we can do distort how we really look as women at any age.
Mm-hmm.
It's rare that you see real role models for all ages, whether it be an 11-year-old or a 61-year-old. It's rare that you see in the media how that age actually looks versus how it's touched up to look.
Yeah, and once you've seen some of those pictures touched up, you really begin to question everything you see, because it's impossible to tell what's real and what's been created.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in that, we're taught to be more critical. We're taught to objectify our bodies instead of owning our bodies and being in them and feeling their strength or their power or their flexibility. We're constantly critiquing them objectively, almost holding them outside of us. Oh, I've got lines here, I've got wrinkles there, or I've got sagginess here. Talking about it like it's a, you know, fly on the wall, when in reality it's ours, and we're spending our life not living in them.
Hmm. So how do you have a conversation with someone about, you know, seeing your body differently and being aware, first of all, of what you're thinking and how you're feeling, and then how to see it differently?
So first and foremost, I'm always going to, you know, look and listen and talk with the client, as I mentioned, to kind of see their model of the world, and then start to open up and allow them to get a sense of their own model of the world. What are their beliefs? What are they thinking in their head all day long about their body or their weight or their food or how they did on this exam? Or what they think about their sneakers, or, you know, mm-hmm. what is the constant roving dialogue that's going on, and what are their beliefs underneath that dialogue? Because for the majority of my clients, they don't even realize how much they objectify and critique their body, food, weight, or even, you know, other things that they're doing in their life, from a test score to, you know, getting a new job. So once they start to actually see that and hear that, they get a sense of what they're really hearing in their mind all the time, a lot of them are astounded and didn't even realize that the majority of that talk was going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think so much of it goes on unconsciously. It's in the background, and I think that it just that keeps playing over and over again, that you often don't realize it's going on.
Yeah, I mean, that's what beliefs really are. Our internal beliefs are actually what's embedded in the unconscious. It's almost like an invisible GPS. And they're dictating and determining all these things that we do, yet we're not even consciously aware of them. And once my clients really get that, it actually starts to shift some things right there, because there becomes an awareness of what's going on in their brain.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't there before.
And that's really powerful to be able to help them shift that.
Because it starts to bring them more subjective. It starts to bring them in themselves again. Wow, I actually have dialogue going on in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could get an awareness of what that is, then we might be able to say, okay, so what about in your body? Instead of thinking about what your body looks like, in your body, sitting in your body, what does it feel like? And that can be a harder transition for some of my clients, but even if we go to their pinky toe or their calf where they actually feel strong, you know, that just starting to bring them back into themselves is a huge transformative shift. Even though it may not seem big on the outside, it's major internally to their psyche.
Interesting. We need to take another real quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk about some of the things that parents might be able to do to help identify if maybe a child, you know, has an eating disorder, or see if there's some symptoms or things that they should be looking for, because I think that would help people be able then to get the support that kids might need. This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
I'm looking for a certain kind of woman, and I think you know her. She's an entrepreneur that is highly connected, successful, significant in her own industry, and considered the go-to woman in her community. She's received so much from so many women in business, she's ready to give back to others on their journey, lifting as she climbs. Hi, this is Sandra Yancey, and I'm the founder and CEO of eWomen Network. I'm looking to connect with the woman I've just described who lives in your community so that we might have a conversation about how eWomen Network's proven success system can provide her a platform to elevate her success and ability to support women in business. Our international community of managing directors are influencing the speed of success for women in business around the world. If that sounds like something that you want to be part of or know someone we should talk with, send an email to managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com. That's managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com, and let's start the conversation.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Janelle McCauley, and today we're talking with Wendy Francis of Empowerment Coaching International. And before the break, we were having a great conversation about just increasing awareness about internal dialogue and how Wendy has the conversation with some of her clients about what they're thinking and what they're feeling. It was really actually very powerful, Wendy. I think if more people could become in tune and aware of that, it would really help us understand some of the things that we actually do.
Yeah. Yes, beliefs are so key to that. It's actually why I have a book called Shattering the Belief Code. It's actually what inspired me to do that, because I believe that beliefs are so powerful, not just in eating disorder transformation, but in all transformations. So I absolutely agree.
I'm going to have to check that out. So when it comes to eating disorders, is there anything that parents can do to identify whether their child has a diagnosable eating disorder? Are there any common symptoms that maybe they should be looking for?
Yes, there is. And first and foremost, it goes back to some of the things we were talking about before, Janelle, you know, in listening. Listening and looking for consistent patterns that your child or adolescent may be displaying around food, weight, or exercise. And so what I mean about consistent is it's happening over and over again. Adolescents, because of their brain development and the way that their frontal lobe shuts down, their cortex or their thinking brain shuts down during adolescence, it's part of development. It happened to you and me, and we're both fine, and it happens to them. But they think more emotionally, more erratically. If you've raised an adolescent, you know that. We know that they think that way, and that's why I say to always listen and look for consistent patterns. So not just one thing that happened one day, because they're emotional, erratic thinkers and behaviors. So looking for consistency and listening to them, listening for anxiety around eating, chronic diets, how they feel about their body, and what they think they want to do about it. Looking for behavior patterns after your child eats. Do they constantly go to the bathroom? Are they hiding foods? Are they getting on their running clothes immediately after they eat and going for a run? So listening and looking for those consistent patterns over and over again. And listening to your child's friends, especially when they're adolescents. Because your child's friends hold the key to your adolescent. So if their friends are starting to make comments, gosh, you hardly eat anymore. Or your daughter's really getting really thin. Or maybe you're approachable enough that their friends will come and say something to you. So listening to your child, listening to their friends, and then looking for consistent behavior patterns before, during, and after their eating. Is what's most important to help you identify whether it's a diagnosable eating disorder or not.
Interesting. And I always tell parents when they say that they can't wait until their kids, you know, their toddlers are in school or so they can go back to work and, you know, their kids will be okay on their own. And I always told parents, if you're going to work when they're babies because you know where they are and who's taking care of them. It's when they're teens that you really want to be around because you want to see these things that are going on. And when kids want to talk, you want to be there because that window of when teens really want to talk to you is very small.
Absolutely right. Yeah, you need to grab it. You know, I have an 11-year-old right now, so she's preteen, and I have this adolescent specialty. And so my daughter, I watch her being right on the verge, right? And so, you know, all of a sudden she'll want to talk to me about something, and I'll, like, drop everything, and I'll sit down right next to her. Mm-hmm. And I'll just soak it all in because I know that that's where we're going. So, yeah, it's very, very true what happens with rearing adolescents. And the more that you can listen to them, the more you'll get the clues are there. It's just really listening and looking to seeing what's in front of you.
Absolutely. And I encourage all parents, if you think something is going on, don't just discount it. That doesn't mean you have to rush off to a specialist, but at least really start to pay attention. I think oftentimes those things are right there in front of us, but we don't want to see them. So we tend to just kind of discount them or downplay them. And, you know, if you get things when they're early, you know, early in the process, it's so much easier to address them than waiting till it's full blown.
Yeah, I always tell parents that will call me and, you know, with questions, just kind of wondering if their child has something. You know, I'll give them a little bit of education on the phone and then I'll direct them to various resources just for them to get some education on what they're questioning about, whether it be, you know, eating disorders or cutting or depression, et cetera, mm-hmm. so that they can first get educated. And then, you know, secondarily, then you can actually schedule a time to talk with your child.
Hmm.
And for adolescents, that works really nicely because of their emotional mood swings and because of a parent, you know, as a parent, I can understand this. If you're worried about something with your child, it's very easy to want to, like, confront it right then, mm-hmm. jump in there, and let's figure this out. But taking a step back and actually saying, okay, your brother's going to be at soccer practice and your other sister's going to be over here and we actually have an hour or two window on Tuesday night. Would you like to go and hang out with me for a little bit and talk? Is an excellent way to shut down the world around you and be able to be in a state of open communication where you can listen truly to your child without distraction. To see if there's an issue rather than just jumping in there and trying to fix it. You're getting educated and then scheduling a time to talk so that everybody's in a calm state without distractions.
No, that's a great suggestion because I think oftentimes we tend to confront those things when we're in a high state of emotion and then because we do want to fix it. We want to make it go away. And when we do that, we don't tend to listen as well and we tend to be more reactive.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And when we're reactive, we're not in empowerment. I mean, the definition of true empowerment is the process of increasing an individual's ability to make choices and to transform those choices into desired actions or outcomes. So the one way that we can make true choices is not being in reaction. So managing our own state, getting calm, centered, grounded, whatever that is for that individual, for that parent, is so key to allow you to communicate with your adolescent or, you know, adult child or young child sometimes,
mm-hmm.
right? But being, you know, managing your own state is really what's first and foremost to allow you to communicate with them.
It's interesting you talk about empowerment because I know when we were in Dallas, you used that term a number of times. And I think feeling empowered is really important, although I don't think a lot of people really know how to feel that way. They often feel that they're, you know, everything else is in control and they're not. And, You know, I think often people, if they've got challenges with food or exercise or any of those things, often feel that they're at the mercy of everything else going on. So what can they do to begin to change that?
So first and foremost, to realize that there are things that you're in control of. There are things that you can actually take in and change that don't have to do with all these external parameters. You know, first and foremost, managing your own state or your own emotions. And for adolescents, this can be a difficult one, but it doesn't have to be the primary obstacle. As long as they're understanding what emotion they're feeling and they can express and communicate their feelings, that is key. Whether they're high or they're low or they're anywhere in between, because what we know is eating disorders, addiction, cutting, depression, suicidality, it's all about inability to express and communicate emotions effectively. So if you can just start to get that facet and understand that your emotions are within you, they're within your control, and they're related to a number of things, like your internal beliefs, your physiology, your internal language, your philosophy on life, the stories that you're holding. There's a whole list, the actions that you're taking. All of those impact our emotions. But at least understanding where you are on the Richter scale and what that's like for you and beginning to learn to express and communicate it is a primary way that people can start to feel empowered. Like I mentioned, as I work with my adolescents and even my adult women, when I'm starting to bring up the facet and the terms around beliefs and, you know, what beliefs do you hold and what are the, you know, what's the tape playing in your mind, that for so many of them, it's the first time that they've heard those words outside of their own mind. And in that moment, they become empowered because they realize, you know, I may say, for example, to, you know, let's just say an 18-year-old who might believe, you know, I'm fat. And she might be saying that to herself, you know, to herself all day long. I'm fat, I'm fat, I'm fat. She brings it outside of herself and she's like, you know, I said I'm fat 28 times to myself yesterday, Wendy. And I'm like, wow, why? Like, why? And they're, you know, and inevitably they look at me and they go, I don't know why. And right there is a moment where you get that transformation because they actually sit back and realize that they have a choice about what they say and how many times they say it, that it's not just happening to them, and so that they can change it.
That's really, really powerful that they do have a choice and they can change it. And I think emotions are one of those topics that are really difficult for people to deal with because we've, you know, I know when I was growing up, you know, you're taught that you're just supposed to act a certain way and do certain things and keep your emotions inside. Your emotions are for your family, that, you know, other people around you shouldn't be seeing them. And so I think it's hard sometimes to figure out, what are you really supposed to communicate and show, and how do you do it in a productive way?
And that's the number one thing I teach parents of my clients to start to teach their kids at a really early age. And if they haven't, then to start now, whatever age they're at. I feel blank because of da-da-da-da-da, whatever that is. To start to begin to communicate and express how you feel. Because inevitably, that can change your life, and it can change the lives of people around you. It sounds like such an easy model, but we're so not taught to express how we feel in our culture, truly feel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so beautiful to be able to do it, because then things don't bottle up inside of you.
Absolutely.
You know, and lead to these other, you know, issues.
We need to take our last break, but I want to continue this conversation when we come back because I find it fascinating and hopefully everyone else does. But we need to just take a real quick final break. And then when we come back, I want to just continue this conversation and then talk about a few things that parents can do to really help their kids identify what the issue is and then help get back on track. This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
You're listening to Janelle McCauley on the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Janelle McCauley, and today we're talking with Wendy Francis of Empowerment Coaching International. And before the break, if you missed it, you need to go back and listen to it. We were talking about empowerment, and we were talking about emotions and how to share your emotions. And I love the exercise that you shared, Wendy, on the how to get your kids to start having those conversations. If I got it right, the I feel blank because of blank. I think a lot of actually spouses could do that exercise too.
It's great, really, in all arenas. And what I find so helpful in non-defensive communication is in using I statements. I coach some couples, as well as I work with some parents and adolescents, obviously, and some business owners. And the reality is, in having healthy discussions, if we stay in I statements, it allows the other person to be in an open communicative stance. But as soon as you say you did this, you made me feel this way, you have to stop. It puts the person on the defense, and then no communication can take place. So all the couples that I work with in the first few sessions, we're always talking about I statements. When I'm talking to parents about beginning to intervene and have communication around their child potentially having an eating disorder, I'm giving real specifics on how to have that I statement communication. It is so important to allow both parties to be in open communication, to stay in I statements. Hmm. And so just using that model can open things up in your world and open communication up with the other individuals.
I imagine when you're dealing with someone with an eating disorder, it's not just dealing with that one person, it's dealing with the people that are close to them too, because it's there's got to be a lot of, and this may be an assumption I'm making, but I would think there's a lot of overlap between the roles and the things that are going on in the behaviors.
Yeah, I there's overlap in every arena, whether it be with the, with the mother, the father, the siblings, the friends. This is a bleeding disorder, so to speak. And not just, not just eating disorders, but, any mental illness. And I hate to look at it in that arena, but we can when we look at eating disorders or cutting or depression or suicidality, all of those things are bleeding disorders. So it's not just affecting that one person. And it's bleeding into all other arenas of their life and to all other people in their life.
That's a really interesting way to look at that. So how can parents help their kids? Because I know a lot of parents struggle with getting their kids, their teenagers especially, to eat regularly and healthfully. And I know having an eating disorder can make that even more complicated. Are there any special strategies that allow parents to help their children, eat easier, more healthfully at home without making the problem worse?
Yes, absolutely. There's three in particular. first is, and I mentioned this before a little bit, is to manage our own state as the parent, to begin to allow ourselves to relax, whether, you know, or be centered or grounded, whatever that state or emotion is for you that allows you to be clear and feel clear-headed and not to be in reaction is what's very important to bring around food and eating for adolescents. And to remember that adolescents do not have their cortex in the works, meaning, so our cortex is the part of our brain that analyzes things. And adolescents' cortex and our amygdala, their feeling and thinking brain, does not connect as ours does in adulthood. So we are the ones that have to hold that space. We are the ones that have to think and feel at the same time, because they're just going to be feeling all over the place. So managing our own state and using our cortex as we can as an adult. And the second thing is to look at the environment. Look at your environment in your kitchen or your back patio. Where do people want to eat? Where does your adolescent want to eat? Do they love eating in your kitchen? Or would they rather eat on the back porch? Would they rather eat in the living room? Listen to what they want instead of being on your own agenda. And I know that this can be difficult completely for parents, but my motto is always, isn't it better to let them eat and have a great experience in your house than it is to be constantly fighting and have the experience that only you want?
Mm-hmm.
So listening to what they want, where do they want their eating environment to be, and then being open to change. Because we know the adolescent brain and body, their hormones, do not work like ours as adults. What that means is they function, right? They function on different circadian rhythms. They actually go to sleep later and want to go to sleep later, and they wake up later. We know that their brain does not come online until between 11 and 12. We know that.
Hmm.
Which means, in reality, they're probably not really hungry until that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
So their hunger radically kicks in at about 3 o'clock when they come home from school. And they walk in the door, and they ravage the refrigerator. And all parents are freaking out because they're like, you're not going to eat dinner. You just ate, you know, 2 pizzas and a salad.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to eat dinner at 5 o'clock? And the reality is that adolescents don't function on our time clock as adults. And they can't, and they're not supposed to, because of their changes in hormones and their changes in brain chemistry. It does not enable them to do that. So start to look at how your family can function within the realm of adolescence. That one tip has helped so many of my families over the course of my career. It's amazing. So I've had parents actually put out leftovers from the night before for that child's meal in the afternoon. So they come mm-hmm. home and they have that, you know, leftover meatloaf, mashed potatoes, green beans, whatever it is, some kind of healthful meal,
mm-hmm.
right? And they have that at 3 o'clock. Now, if the adults, and maybe there's young children in the house, need or want to sit down at 5:30, then they may make it socially acceptable. Please just come to the table so we can talk about the day. You don't have to eat. Have a glass of water. Have something that you want. And just sit with us.
Mm-hmm.
And then they use those leftovers so that that adolescent can have it at about 8 o'clock when they are hungry. Knowing that it's not about a power struggle with your child or adolescent, it really is about their brain and body chemistry. So being open to change allows for power struggles to disappear.
I know so many people that need to hear that message. Where were you when my kids were teenagers? Just the feeling and the thinking brain, that thing. I'm thinking back as you know, my boys, and they're wonderful adults, but boy, there were years that I wasn't sure that anyone was going to survive, because they didn't teach you that. You know, they're in their 30s now, so it's been a while, and I know there's a lot of science and a lot of things that have come up, but boy, that would have been so powerful for me. This has been just, I just very, very intriguing, and I've learned so much. So how can our listeners get in touch with you? How can they learn more about what you do and on some of these topics?
Absolutely. So you can go to my website, Empowerment Coaching International. You can also find me on Amazon. Shattering the Belief Code is my best-selling book that's out now. It just launched a few months ago. And today I'm also launching my first podcast, so Real Raw Truths. You can also find me on that website as well, as Empowerment Coaching International. And on my website, there are links to either schedule a time to talk with me, my phone number. There's also a free downloadable workbook on how to actually change your own internal belief structure.
That sounds really fascinating. And we'll put a link on our eatgreatlivewellradio.com website to your website with a link to today's show. So they'll be able to get all that there too. But that's great, and I'm sure people are going to go check it out. So if you could give our listeners just one action item that they can implement in the next week to start creating a healthier future for themselves and their family, what would it be?
So I'm a firm believer in what we focus on is what we feel. So take 3 to 5 minutes as you're falling asleep every night and focus on the good things that you did or you felt that day. Focus on what went right. Focus on what you did. When you focus on what's great, that's how you feel. Whether that be focusing on what was great in how you ate or how you felt in your body, how you moved your body, or what you did for your friend, or what you did with a friend. So empowering to allow us to feel how we want to feel in our world and be in choice. First reaction.
That is definitely a great action item. So I'm going to encourage everyone to do that in the next week. I really want to thank you for your time today. It's been a great conversation, and I've learned so much. And if you could just see all the little notes and all the things that that you talked about that I wrote down that I want to remember, it's just been a great conversation. So thank you, Wendy, so much.
Absolutely. Thank you, Janelle. I really appreciate it. This has been fantastic.
So until next week, remember that even small changes can make a positive difference in your health and your life. Healthy choices you make every day add up over time to create a healthy future for yourself and your family. Be sure to join me each week as we continue the conversation on how to build a healthier relationship with food and with yourself. And again, I invite you to go to eatgreatlivewellradio.com and be part of the conversation. Click on our Facebook link and share your thoughts. Share your favorite takeaway from today's conversation and share what other questions you have, and we'll be happy to come back and get them addressed. Take care and have a great and healthy week. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in to Eat Great, Live Well Radio, your trusted source for the information you need to take control of your health and your life. Each week at this time, we bring you straight talk about eating healthier without giving up the foods you love. Join us next Thursday and every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on the EWN Radio Network. To get a replay of this week's show, listen to past shows, or contact Janelle, go to eatgreatlivewellradio.com. Have a great week, and remember, you can choose to eat great and live well.